Why do you say that, Father? You aren't afraid, are you?
No. But I respect some of the superstitions of others. Often they are founded in fact.
Broadcasting live from our Sanctum Sanctorum in Venice, California, this is the Sixth Sense Society. I'm your host, Krista, here with our producer, Michael, and today we are thrilled to have our first UFO expert on today, Preston Dennett. I said it wrong after all that. Preston Dennett. And he is a field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, a ghost hunter, a paranormal researcher, and the author of 30 books and more than 100 articles on UFOs and the paranormal. Several of his books have been Amazon UFO bestsellers, and his articles have appeared in numerous magazines, including Fate, Atlantis Rising, MUFON UFO Journal, Nexus, Paranormal Magazine, UFO Magazine, Phenomena Magazine, Mysteries Magazine, and others. He has appeared on numerous radio and TV programs, including one of our favorites, Art Bell, and it was Midnight in the Desert. He's been on Coast to Coast and also the History Channel's Deep Sea UFOs, UFO Hunters, and Ancient Aliens. And we're also going to be talking about his latest book, Not From Here, Selected UFO Articles, Volume 4, as well as just alien encounters in general. But before we get started, Michael has a few announcements.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to our broadcast. And you guys, I see some people on chat already. If you have any questions for Preston, please just hit a chat. And Crystal will pay attention, as will I. And we'll make sure we pass them on. All kinds of great stuff coming up. We have Spell It Out next week, Krista's little free-for-all show. And she'll be doing some topic of interest to her. And then we'll start the next month with our good friend Merle Yost, who's our family therapist, who's amazing. And can't wait to have him back. He's just an awesome dude. Get all the information on our website, sixthsensesociety.com, S-I-X-T-H, all spelled out. And while you're there, buy us a coffee on Ko-Fi and helps us cover our cost a little bit. And we do appreciate it. And we love having all you guys here anyway. And the best thing you can do, click like and subscribe on YouTube. And that really helps us as much as anything you can possibly do. So I don't want to take up too much time today because I'm so excited to have Preston here. It's going to be such a fun show. So I'm going to kick it back to you guys. So take it away, Krista.
Great. Thank you, Michael. And welcome, Preston.
Thanks, Krista. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, you know, I actually had a dream last night with David Duchovny in it. I figure it was the, you know, X-Files type thing night before the show I'm thinking about.
So, very cool.
I thought that was funny. I don't usually dream about him. So I think it might be nice to know a little bit about how you got started in all of this and when you got started.
Yeah, gosh, it was a long time ago, over 35 years. I can hardly believe it.
Wow.
Yeah, most of my life I've been doing this. I was actually pretty young. I was, well, let's see, 21 years old. It was 1986. I actually remember the exact day. It was November 17, 1986. Mm. And at that time, I was very skeptical of UFOs and really anything paranormal. And, you know, come from a large family, five brothers and sisters. I thought they were all skeptical too. And some were, but some were not. They were keeping secrets. Mm. Yes. It was really shocking. The news came on, a news report about a sighting over Alaska. It's very well known in the UFO community now. It was a sighting by a Japanese commercial airliner where two UFOs appeared in front of the plane while it's flying. It was on their radar. It was on ground radar. It followed their plane for almost an hour. Amazing case. The news report was very short, very kind of joking, and a little bit kind of insultingly ridiculing even. But I remember they showed the picture of the pilot, Captain Kenju Tarochi, and I saw his picture. And I thought, wow, you know, why would a pilot report a UFO sighting? Mm. And I thought, well, he's hallucinating, he's lying, he's misperceiving. Something's going on here. But he threw his career away, which actually turned out to be true. But it interested me. and it kind of just pierced through my armor of skepticism enough to remember that my brother Mark, my older brother, had said he'd seen a UFO some years earlier. And so I approached him, like, "Mark, you think you saw a UFO, right?" And he kind of looked at me, "What?" I'm like, "Yeah, I told you." I'm like, "Well, tell me again." And this time I was ready to listen, and he described this amazing sighting. And that's kind of what, how it all started. It was the sighting of a metallic disc, colored lights, a dome on top. He was with two friends, so he had witnesses with him. I ended up talking to them too, because I really wanted to know what he saw. And they described the same thing. He actually chased it down the road for 15 minutes. So yeah, an amazing sighting. And it turned out that I had two sister-in-laws who had sightings, saw ETs actually, and several friends, one who had missing time, at least one, two actually, and people at work, a number of them had very close-up sightings. One lady, she had missing time. Another lady, her daughter saw gray aliens, the little short guys with the big bald heads. So yeah, that's how it started. I was devastated. I was scandalized. I was not happy because I just couldn't believe it. It was a big, big adjustment, and that's
so,
why I
just... so it was very shocking. How long did it take you to really get to a point where you weren't so much shocked, but sort of intrigued by the whole process?
I'm still working on it in a way. No, I mean, seriously, I would say I was intrigued immediately, but I wasn't fully convinced. Because it was just so much to handle. It took me a year, really. And by that time, I had bought enough books, I think. And I started interviewing people formally. I joined MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and took their test to become a field investigator.
Wow, so you joined right away.
But within a year.
Wow.
I think it was around a year, yeah. I had no idea MUFON even existed. I had no idea about any of this. It was amazing to me to find out that there were books out there on the subject that had been studied for decades, that I was really a latecomer to the field, that there was a cover-up that was demonstrable, easily proven right off the bat. And yeah, it wasn't taught in schools. The only show, Krista, that I ever saw on TV that took this at all seriously was... You may remember it, In Search Of, with Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, of course.
It was a good show, but I just kind of remember shaking my head at some of the stories there. And it slipped under my radar somehow. I just thought that the stars were too far away. There's no way UFOs could get here. People who saw them were stupid or lying, hallucinating, or misperceiving, which turns out to be the government sort of go-to explanation. They were spending a lot of, still are, spending a lot of money, time, and effort to discredit this subject and to make witnesses look like fools, using our tax dollars, by the way.
Right. It's funny. I would say I've always been interested in science fiction since I can remember. And the UFO idea, I just didn't want to dive into because I knew I would need to go kind of full in. So I kind of just kept it, you know, sort of to the side, not deciding what I really believed one way or the other, because I said, oh, I have to look at some of the evidence. And I don't know what, maybe even though ancient aliens, I don't always agree with them. I do think watching that show, I started watching it late, actually, and I really enjoyed a lot of the early shows, especially the, you know, the ancient civilization side. And I think it just started getting me thinking about it. Well, what do I think about it? And I still was sort of on the edge about, do I want to go down this rabbit hole? Because I'm in the paranormal and, you know, it's a vast area. You can't really sort of be in the middle, I find. If you want the truth, if you're trying to find the truth, you have to kind of really say, okay, I'm going to go in there. And it sounds like you just like jumped right in.
Yeah, well, I was incredibly naive about it, really. I kind of fell in, not realizing that this was a rabbit hole. Because I started, you know, researching UFOs and immediately realized, well, I'm going to have to look into ghosts now because people were talking about that and near-death experiences, and really the whole range of paranormal, everything from channeling and multiple personalities, even though that's not really paranormal, but it came up. And yeah, cryptozoology, that one I again got dragged into because I was afraid Bigfoot might be real. And I'm like, no, I'm not opening that can of worms.
The Bigfoot.
I'm not going there. And I refused until I finally got a Bigfoot case. And I'm like, well, fine, I'll do it. But yeah, it was a lot. It was a huge rabbit hole. And I still have not found my way out of it. It's layers and layers and layers to these subjects.
It is. And, you know, I went through a period, I've been metaphysics for a long, long time. And I went through a period because some of the people, especially in the psychic world in LA at the time, that was like maybe the early, late 90s, I found were very fraudulent. And at one point I just didn't want to be part of that psychic realm. I was feeling like, and again, this was mostly my experience in LA. I hadn't lived in LA before. And there's a lot of money, and wherever there's a lot of money, there's a lot of fraud in all areas, right? There's all kinds of cons. And what brought me back to feeling good about it was, you know, reading my second biography of Edgar Cayce, and what a good person he was, and how legitimate he was. And I said, see, there's some really incredible people, and I just needed to sort of make sure I was on the right, you know, sort of path in the metaphysical world. And but there are things I am more open to, like when you said the multiple personalities, there's some theory that this spirit attachments can be sometimes a form of mental illness. And I was initially really against that idea until I read this book by a doctor who stumbled upon these spirit attachments without really looking for it. And it's a very compelling story. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. You know, so he had more like evidence of sort of how he treated people, and how he said often it was actually quite easy to remove once you know that there's a spirit attachment.
Yeah, I looked into all of that stuff, demons, angels, spirit attachment, channeling, like I said, because there is a weird connection and overlays and bleed throughs, I guess, to a lot of this stuff. And I really wanted to understand it, because people who are having UFO sightings and or onboard experiences, really, we're talking about a wide variety of paranormal events, past life recall, healing, you know, psychic healing,
right,
levitation, even human levitation. I had a family friend who described physically levitating as a little girl, and I just could not believe it, and asked everybody, and I got a lot of eye rolling, but I found another family friend of a friend, really, who described that experience and ended up doing research and found out, yeah, there is such a thing as human levitation. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm. It's interesting. You hear about, with, you know, extraterrestrials, you hear about telepathy quite often, or telepathic communication. So I'm wondering if maybe someone who's really much, you know, getting into remote viewing and all this other stuff, if in some way they're opening up a channel to that, so that the extraterrestrial can say, oh, there's somebody willing to talk. And so it does kind of draw them in almost.
100%. Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Michael, because it's kind of a two-way street. I noticed that some people who have encounters will suddenly have a spiritual transformation. They'll really wake up to a lot of this, but it comes the other way. People will have a real high psychic awareness, a lot of paranormal experiences, a near-death experience can wake you up to a lot of these abilities. And then the UFOs come along. I do think they recognize people who are ideal candidates for, you know, communicating and learning.
Mm-hmm.
So I've looked at, like, who's having contact and why?
Mm.
There's a lot, you know, a lot of questions about that in this field. People are like, why you and why not me? And I, after having interviewed hundreds of people, I had a database, right, that I could trust, because I knew it was my own. And it was equally divided between men and women. Mm. I thought, well, that's interesting. And, you know, there was talk about blood type, Rh negative. And I didn't always ask, because I didn't know to ask. But it was clear that that wasn't a huge factor.
Mm.
People of every ancestry. But what I did find was that pattern is that a lot of them were profoundly psychic.
Hmm.
And so that was there. Also, if your parents have had encounters or your grandparents, it's generational. particularly onboard experiences. And here's another interesting pattern that I found, because I was doing research into UFO healing cases, which is when someone's taken on board or struck by a beam of light from a UFO or what have you, and they're healed. And honest to God, there's a lot of cases. I ended up writing a book. Well, it's my first book, but I put out another. I found 300 cases.
Wow.
So I'm like, why are these people being healed? I want a healing. This is insane. Hmm. And I was looking at all the information I had, and I finally figured it out. When I interviewed this lady from Norway, she contacted me, and I'm going, she had no history of encounters in her family, which was kind of different, you know, unusual. I thought, okay, what do you do for a living after, you know, I interviewed her? And she's like, oh, well, you know, I'm a retired graphics artist, but really I am very active in the field of human and animal rights in my country. Hmm. Please don't use my name because I'm pretty well known. And that rang a bell because I had just interviewed a couple of social workers. So I'm like, oh my gosh, all these cases started lining up in my mind. Hmm. So the people who are being healed, and this is true for people who are being contacted in general, are doing good work for humanity. So you see lots of doctors, nurses, social workers, environmentalists, animal and human rights activists, teachers, musicians even, inventors, police officers. So that's, it's a loose pattern. It's not hard and fast, but it turned up enough. I'm like, wow, look at this. This is interesting.
Wow, that is so cool. I love that.
Yeah, you know what I like about that, Krista, is I think it points towards sort of the ET agenda, because there's a lot of fear surrounding the subject, confusion, honestly, a lot of disinformation. There's an ET threat narrative being put forth by our governments, and the media sort of capitalizes on that. And it's not true. It's not supported by the evidence. Not to say that people don't have traumatic and scary experiences. Mm-hmm. They do. The fear is largely coming from them. The ETs, as a general rule, when they contact someone, will say the same thing. It's don't be afraid. Have no fear. We're not here to hurt you. No harm will come to you. And it's some variation of that. Mm-hmm. And the onboard experience follows a pretty set pattern, which was outlined long before I came to the field. After there was a guy, Thomas Bullard, a folklorist initially, and a UFO researcher who was 330 cases he analyzed, and said, yeah, this is what happens. You're taken on board, you're physically examined, you're given messages. Those are also pretty positive in that they're aimed towards helping us. Mm-hmm. People get messages like warnings against nuclear proliferation, about the dangers of pollution, our warlike ways, you know, the violence, the greed, the corruption, things like that, the destruction of our environment. Message that we need to hear.
Right.
And then they'll take you for, this is so interesting to me, they take you for a tour of the craft. It happens more often than you would think, because a lot of people talk about, well, all I really remember is being physically examined and it was scary as heck, and I had missing time and I didn't like it at all. And it's really upsetting. I've got this scar. And this is what a lot of people will talk about. Mm. But those who don't have that fear, you know, aren't like paralyzed on the table and don't necessarily have missing time or at some point will remember. And this is what they describe, getting these messages, getting a tour of the craft. They'll take you up to the observation deck, usually the top of the craft, but not always, anywhere. And the walls will all turn transparent. Hmm. It's really interesting how consistent this is. They don't have like windows with frames usually. They'll just turn a portion of the wall transparent or all of it. And they'll say, look, there's the moon. Look, there's the earth far below. Hmm. I have several cases where people were taken to see Saturn.
Wow.
I know, right?
That'd be beautiful.
First time I heard that, I'm like, wow. It was so cool. And, another reason I've come to really believe that this is not a nefarious experience at all is because the spiritual transformation aspect. Mm. And a lot of researchers, early ones especially, wouldn't talk about this. which I kind of understand because this was a difficult subject to accept and get into the mainstream. Mm-hmm. Talking about levitation and telepathy and healing and all the psychic stuff had a tendency to, you know, push people away a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's absolutely an integral, crucial part of this. It's one of their main, I don't like that word agenda, I'll say goals. One of their missions is to wake people up to our abilities. Mm. We can do things that people aren't even aware of in terms of psychic reading and precognition and past life recall and astral projection and healing. It goes down the list there. So that's exactly what happens when people are taken on board. It was outlined years ago by Thomas Bullard. And I certainly found that true in my research. And so is John Mack and Barbara Lamb and Ray Hernandez and Edith Fiore and, you know, most of the major researchers. Some are very fear-based. Some are on my naughty list because they are liars. I really feel like there is paid disinformance in this field.
I think the idea of the fact that we have more potential as humans, and that way maybe we do have alien DNA, and I'm with you on that from all of my own research and experiences, that there's so much more that I think we're going to be capable of, and I think we're kind of moving into that period where there'll be more of that happening, and especially around healing. Because, you know, you'll hear these amazing stories of healing with one person, and I feel like this, we just don't understand the mechanisms. And then once we do, we all will be able to do a lot of this healing in ways that only a few seem to be able to do.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's, in a way, no such thing as the paranormal or supernatural. It's not violating the laws of the universe. It's like you said, we don't fully understand the mechanism behind it. And so we kind of label it unknown, which it is unknown, but it's not supernatural. It's natural. We all have these abilities. Mm-hmm. I've interviewed so many people, pretty much everyone I've ever talked to has at least one paranormal event, that a dream which came true, or went out of body, or, you know, something. Mm-hmm. And some have so many. And like you said, we have amazing abilities. And that's one of the ET messages to people, is to wake up your own psychic abilities. They will always tell people, you know, you are us, we are you, we are one. And I do think that we are probably having ET heritage, because this is the message that ETs give people. Mm-hmm. And it's over and over again. It's all about DNA. They're very much interested in, you know, sort of maintaining our DNA. That's one of the main purposes for onboard experiences. It's all about healing. Healing is such a big part of this. Mm. And so many people come away feeling that they do have the ability to heal. It's very pronounced.
And that's definitely not known as well, at least on a mass level, the healing side of it, because of a variety of the media, because of shows, which aren't necessarily bad, but again, it's true of even, well, that's true even of the paranormal too, you know, with the, we were talking before the show about ghosts that are helpful and save people's lives aren't televised as much. So it's more of the fear aspect, and that's our issue, humans.
Yeah, we do have a lot of fear, don't we?
We do.
I get it. You know, my mom passed away in 1984, which was sort of a way that I started to get involved in the paranormal, because I did see her spirit. And I started having dreams and lucid dreams, and that led to out-of-body experiences. But I was so filled with fear at that time, mm-hmm. and busted by it. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. And I just left fear behind and realized that the universe is essentially safe. Mm-hmm. What's the worst that can happen? You're going to experience pain, you know, and loss and these sort of things, unpleasantness and death is a lie. And if you look into life after death, the evidence for that is outstanding.
Yes.
We're immortal beings. There's no doubt about it.
Yes. Yeah, there's just so much, and there's like great evidence for reincarnation now. Even though sometimes people still try to poo-poo it, there's always going to be those closed-minded skeptics. And, you know, if that makes them happy, they're going to be in the minority more and more. I think they are, actually, because there's so many cultures and so much newer, even scientific studies and evidence, so that to sort of placate people that, you know, I like science, but I don't think it's the only way to have evidence personally. I think these anecdotal stories across cultures are evidence because there's so many of them. And like we were talking before too, once you've had your own experience, even after I've had an experience and my ego saying, did that really happen? You know, I was like, I've had enough really bizarre, even some things I still don't know what they were. I was going to tell you one thing. I think I might've seen an alien, but I'm not even sure was in, it was in the Hudson area, which I didn't know at the time was, you know, had a lot of activity. And I think it was in the early 90s where there was that second Woodstock concert, not the one after, that was kind of a mess. And I'd gone to the concert and I was going to pick up my stuff in Saugerties. It was about 5 p.m. and I had an upsetting time with some friends. So I'd been crying a lot, but I wasn't on any drugs. And I looked at this car and there was this strange white tiny creature just sitting on the car looking at me. It was not very big, and it scared me so bad. I just screamed. I was all by myself. I screamed and ran in the house and got the dog, thinking the dog will help me somehow. And then it was gone. But I really have no, and I wasn't really even into the UFOs. I was very doing a lot of spiritual practice. I was really into Buddhism, and but even the psychic stuff, I wasn't really cultivating. But I'll never forget it because it was clear. It was almost like a little transparent, but it was definitely not like a ghost thing. And it had sort of like a round, sort of an oval face, and it was all kind of white. And maybe it was about 4 feet, and it was just sitting on top of a car. And that's the only time I ever saw anything, and it did freak me out. So I was like, yeah, I said,
that's interesting.
Yeah, and I thought, okay, it could have been, because I still don't know what it is, you know. And I didn't even tell anybody for a while. And it wasn't because I was embarrassed. It was just that idea, like, did I really see that? You know, I mean, you part of when you're not, you know, used to it, I suppose if you do it enough, or you're a person that is able to see things well, maybe you can accept it more readily.
Yeah, that sounds like a light being. It's funny, I've interviewed a lot of people who had no exposure to this subject and don't immediately think ET or UFO. People have a tendency to interpret these things through the lens of their belief system. Mm. And a lot of the times there's nothing that they can even refer to. People will often say, oh, you know, ghost, angelic, demonic, or something that they've at least heard of.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it can be very difficult for people. And only in hindsight do they realize, I think that may have actually been an ET or a UFO.
What are light beings in your mind?
Well, it's interesting because what we're looking at in terms of entities are a wide variety. And we see grays, of course, a lot. Certainly in the media, a lot of people report the little short guys. But there's praying mantis types. There's human-looking, ones that look just like us, which raise all kinds of implications. Little blue beings and glowing light beings are fairly commonly reported.
Mm.
These are almost always humanoid, almost without exception, really. But it goes beyond that. I mean, there are, of course, Bigfoot, which are real. If you look into it, do your homework, and I think you'll be surprised. But look at the fairy lore of, you know, Ireland.
Mm.
Europe, which kind of faded away in the 21st and 20th centuries, but it's still going on. I've talked to people who have seen that, you know, in this lifetime. There are modern cases of this, and it's very interesting because if you go through culture to culture, you'll see a wide variety of paranormal beings, supernatural entities of all kinds, not just ETs.
Right.
So I really wonder about that. But I think we absolutely are, in terms of the UFO phenomena, a lot of stuff does get put under the UFO umbrella. That probably doesn't belong there.
Mm-hmm.
But I am 100% convinced that we are being visited by people like us, really a lot like us, but from other planets. Honestly, they're biological beings in metallic craft that are landing here and leaving landing traces and taking people up, and they're not in their homes when people are looking for them. Mm-hmm. This is not a psychological experience by any means. It's real, and I think it is extraterrestrial, a lot of it.
Yeah, that is amazing when they're gone and then they come back. And I know that some people don't come back, so I also started thinking, like, how many missing people are basically abducted for whatever reason and never returned? If that's possibly, some of them could be ET, and then some could be just obviously natural things.
Yeah, well, I looked into that. There's a guy who does a lot of research into that, David Paulides, and he's become very well known because people are now realizing there are a lot of missing people, which clearly do have a number of explanations, everything from runaways to, I mean, some really nefarious government stuff and trafficking and mm-hmm. what have you. I think some are probably ET. There was, and I think it's probably benevolent. I mean, there was a lady in Maine that I interviewed. She had ET contact, and the ETs told her all kinds of stuff. It was so interesting. Hmm. They said, you need to tell people to stop eating so much meat. It's not necessary to survive. They told her that they've been contacting humanity for eons, and that a lot of what we thought were angels were really them. They said, you need to tell people to stop putting out the greed and negativity you're putting out, because you're going to destroy your society. Mm-hmm. We had that problem. You're on that road. They told her that they had been upgrading the genetics of humans and animals, and this was interesting to me, dogs and cats in particular. Mm-hmm. Help boost their emotional intelligence to better interact with humans.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought that was weird because, you know, dogs and cats are so close to us and very much have that range of emotions like humans. But they did tell her, people should go missing from this planet. It's being done by us for the universal good. Mm. So that fits in there. And real quick, one other, I'll try to be quick. But this is a case that's interesting. A guy I interviewed had gone out with a group of six of his friends. They were all teenagers and, you know, up to 22 years old, 19, 20, that age, into the high desert of California, where they'd spend weekends at one of their cabins. And one guy, Paul is his name, went missing one night. We're like, oh my God, we have to send out a search party for Paul. He had taken a walk. And this was a rural area, right? So they're like, well, let's go find him. And he comes walking in. He's like, guess what, guys? I came upon this landed UFO, and there was ETs, and they looked almost exactly like us. They were really nice. Their ship was clean. They wore white suits. They said they're studying this area and so forth. He says, they invited me to go with them permanently. And everyone's like, you're kidding me. You know, and the guy I interviewed who was there, knew this guy pretty well, knows he's not the kind of jokey guy, and could clearly tell he was telling the truth, and got all these details. And he's like, yeah, they invited me to go with them, and I didn't want to go because I wasn't ready. But they said, if you're interested, we're going to be back here next year at this date. Hmm. And long story short, you know, he went back 1 year later. He quit his job. He gave all his stuff away. And the guy I interviewed, Tony's, said, are you planning on going with them? And Paul's like, you know, I don't know. I might. He did, apparently, because they found he didn't come back.
Wow.
Tony and the other friends and Paul's parents drove up to this cabin, and there was Paul's car. Keys were in it. No sign of him. They never found him. It was a big deal, you know, a missing persons case. The police were called, and everyone told the police, well, this is what Paul said, you know. I honestly think he was.
That's amazing. That is real. I've never heard a story like that.
I know, it's amazing. I've heard others. I have. So that, I think that does happen.
Mm-hmm. That's neat that he had a year to think about it.
Yeah, that's awfully nice.
Yeah. I mean, on the spot, it might be a little tricky to decide one way or the other. So, I mean, it definitely would be, I mean, I don't know, that could be pretty exciting. Sort of like, to me, it's almost like Doctor Who coming in and saying, you want to come on my time travel machine? And I'd be like, sure. You know, but he could bring you back though, so that's the difference, and it could be the same time.
Yeah, well, people do get to take all kinds of rides on board UFOs. It's not, the word abduction is a misnomer. And I know that there are many experiencers out there who feel this was involuntary. Hmm. I am not so sure that that's true. Having interviewed so many people, most of them at some point will come around to realizing this is not nefarious. It's not negative. This is an experience they wouldn't trade for anything. It was very positive. Hmm. Many of them are healed. It's not at all uncommon. And usually they drop that term abductee in favor of experiencer or contactee.
Mm. That's a good difference. The difference in the words make a big difference, what you call yourself.
Yeah, this field has suffered from semantic disaster from day one. UFO, what does that even mean?
Hmm. Now, do you think the recent disclosures of some of the governments is helping at this point, even if it's not full disclosure or they're still sort of giving misinformation? Do you think it's helping at all?
I'm kind of two minds about it. Yeah, I think it has helped, not the way that they would have liked, because it's helped in the fact that it's brought legitimacy to this field to a certain extent. It's brought a lot of more people's interest. You know, it's woken a lot of people up to there is something going on, but it's filled with lies. The congressional hearings that we had, I watched very closely as mm-hmm. it occurred, and I wanted to throw things at that TV. I really did, because they lied. Mm. They were putting a fear narrative on it. This is dangerous for national security. Really? These guys have been around for thousands of years before humanity even. You know, I mean, if they wanted to take over, they would have long ago. Mm-hmm. That's clear. They were asked, have we ever shot at them? And they said, no. I'm like, well, that's demonstrably untrue. I mean, there's the very famous Battle of LA in 1942, where we did shoot at them. This is verifiable. 1,500 mm-hmm. rounds of ammunition. Mm-hmm. Five people died from falling debris and heart attacks and car accidents and things like this. They lied throughout congressional hearings, and I don't think they're going to tell the truth. I think the only disclosure we're getting now is because they're trying to keep control of the narrative, mm-hmm. trying to remain at least partly credible. Because if they don't disclose, people, we already know UFOs are real at this point. You only have to pick up a couple of books mm-hmm. to say that there's something to this. The evidence is there. Disclosure has happened. The ETs have shown themselves enough, left enough evidence that anyone who's of rational, objective mind to examine the evidence is going to come away convinced. So it's not on the ETs' part. It's not on ours. It's on the government. And they're still lying, and I think they're going to continue to lie. I don't trust them one iota. Not a bit. They have a heinous... I love that word. It's a heinous record on this subject.
Yeah. Well, I think also with the camera phones, there's just so much more footage. I mean, it's they just ordinary people can be going about their business, and now they actually have an easy way to video and around the world. And that's also making it more democratic and more, there's only so much that you can hide if everyone's starting to watch. And they have proof of things.
I think also, too, you see these videos coming out more and more of from like fighter pilots and stuff. And to me, again, you have someone who's highly trained in aircraft, aerial phenomena, and all this kind of stuff. And when you hear their voices and they are completely bewildered or excited right. or panicked about what they're seeing, and they have no clue what it is, and you can tell it's something physical and tangible. It's not just a shadow from the moon or something. And to me, that really is the most interesting, incredible thing, because you have such a highly trained expert in aircraft and everything else that is seeing something that's simply blowing his mind.
Yeah, you can hear him swearing and stuff. It's funny. The evidence is there. Yeah, a book I put out recently, which is probably a favorite of that I've written, is called Symmetry, The True UFO Adventure. Hmm. It was all about a lady by the name of Dolly Safran, and she has her own YouTube channel. Where she put out a lot of the footage that she's gotten. And yeah, you can hear her going, oh my gosh, look! And a few swear words slip out here and there, but the footage is amazing. And her story is so cool because she is someone who overcame fear, doesn't have missing time. A lot of people use hypnosis and stuff to recall their experiences. Mm-hmm. She overcame that when she was 14 years old and it's been taken on board. And everything I've been talking about, she's experienced full on, being taken to other planets even.
Wow.
And closely with them. I was so blessed to, you know, meet her because she really explained a lot of the questions even I had, having interviewed hundreds of people and trying to connect all the dots and fill in the blanks of what kind of ETs people are seeing and what is the ET agenda and why are they here? Where do they come from? What is going on? So that's a, you know, if anyone has questions, I would not look to the government for answers. Look to the contactees. In her case, I think more than any I've certainly researched or really even read about, honestly, answered a lot of questions.
Wow, that's amazing. And well, you have a lot of information through your books and also your YouTube, I noticed too. And I think that to me, in any sort of field, looking to people that have been doing it for a longer period of time, because you tend to run into sort of repetitive themes and, you know, you start to put things together. You're a real, you know, investigator. And it sounds like there's, you know, there's some even more that have been doing it for a long time, even though, like you said that before, I remember Fate Magazine's been around for like 75 years, right? Which I still like Fate Magazine. Yeah. So it's still got some great stories in it. So, you know, looking for people that have invested some time into it too.
Yeah. I mean, armchair research is very important and I do it myself, but I love getting out in the field and talking to witnesses firsthand. It's funny because I don't know how many books there are on Roswell. I lost count. It was well over 50. I think it's closer to 100, the Roswell UFO crash in 1947 in New Mexico. It's very well known. But it's funny to me to hear, you know, see new books being published on the subject, which have no new information in them
yeah.
at all. I'm like, oh gosh, you know.
Well, it takes time and commitment to do anything, you know, in terms of a real investigation. And also a certain kind of curiosity. Just, you know, wanting to know from new ways and new people. And it sounds like from the very beginning, you were very interested in other people, which is not a quality everybody has, actually. So we can develop it. But
yeah, I became obsessed with this subject, and I still am, because it hit my family. This is something that literally hit home for me. Mm-hmm. I have a sister-in-law who saw grays and another who saw little blue beings, and my sister Valerie ended up seeing a UFO and right after she had her baby. It completely hit home for me. I eventually started seeing them myself because, like you said, it's one thing to talk about this and read about it and listen to other people, but until you see it yourself, true knowledge comes really only from personal experience.
Mm-hmm. I did want to note that Dolly is chatting here with us as we were talking. So I didn't know she's on the chat. Dolly Safran.
Yeah, she's amazing. We've done lots of shows together. I'm sure she'd do your show if you're interested, but.
Absolutely. This is our, you know, we've decided to, you know, go completely into the whole UFO. Like you said, there's a crossover with all of the paranormal and you eventually get all interhooked and interlinked if you just keep following the threads, you know, and so we're excited about sort of opening our show up to more of the alien and UFO. Plus Pluto just moved into Aquarius for 2 decades. And there is no doubt there's going to be some really amazing things happening with space and technology. And I think the alien whole, everything, things, especially secrets coming out. So I think whether, however they come out, the government can only, I mean, go right ahead. You can hide things, but I think the people have more power. And what I notice about the UFO people, they're really embracing that. They're like, well, we'll do it. You know, it's like, we'll do the investigation. We're gonna find the truth. And I remember watching, it was some movie or something, a documentary. I said, yeah, I like that, you know? So.
Thanks, Krista, I love that. I've always said that, you know, people think the governments are running things. No, the biggest force on this planet, I think, is us.
Yes.
I really do. And yeah, you can try to hide the truth. You can distort it. You'll never destroy it.
Right.
You just won't. And open official contact and disclosure are inevitable. There's no way you can put the toothpaste back in the tube. It's not going to happen.
It's
going to roll out one way or another.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I did want to talk to you a little bit about your latest book. So Not From Here, Selected UFO Articles, Volume 4. And can you explain a little bit about that series and then also what's different about this Volume 4?
Yeah, I love this series. I've really had a great time writing it. And it started basically because I found out, you know, I've written a bunch of articles on this subject, and magazines have a pretty short shelf life. And these books, these volumes, are all about the stranger and unusual patterns in UFO activity, the outline cases, the controversial ones, ones that, you know, don't get a lot of attention, or some researchers are frankly afraid to discuss them because they can, you know, there's a lot of high strangeness in this field. And so I started with, you know, one volume, fully expecting to write others. Now I'm up to volume 4. There's going to be a volume 5 forthcoming. And this latest one explores some very interesting aspects of UFO contact. Like we were talking about before the show, car lift cases. Or, you know, there's a penchant for UFOs to chase cars down desert highways, often at night in remote areas.
They must be from L.A. We love our car chases here.
Yeah, we do. Don't? But these cases take it to a whole new level in that these UFOs come right over the car. This is so strange. And lift it up and will carry it anywhere from a few hundred yards or less in some cases, but often, you know, a quarter mile, a mile. I think the biggest case is 6 miles, one case in Peru, right above the road, and then set you back down. I mean, that is just beyond weird.
Do you know why they do that?
I can only speculate, but I think I've got a handle on it because, you know, sometimes they will take a car and pull you on board and do the whole examination and sort of counseling session and healing and so forth. That's not happening in most of these cases. I think this is what researchers call a display, because there is a type of behavior where UFOs basically show off purposefully, intentionally, announcing their presence. They have a publicity campaign. Researchers know all about this. This is why we have UFO waves. I wrote a book about schoolyard encounters where they hover over schools, land. ETs will come out. There's 100 cases, all more. I have a book about drive-in theater encounters where they hover over drive-in theaters and show themselves. So I think this is a really overt, in-your-face, jokey, kind of practical jokey way of letting every, you know, sort of a grassroots campaign. Mm. They do small groups and larger groups, but one by one, they're announcing their presence. And this is a way you would never for in a million years be able to explain this away as anything like a helicopter.
Right. Now, is it more in sort of rural roads that this happens, or like at night? Is this more from your research?
Well, interesting. Let me think for a second. Yeah, I would say it's mostly, but certainly not always. There was a case in downtown, it was Union, Missouri, where actually this lady had no idea that people all down this road who lived we're calling the police and reporting this UFO, and she's driving, and of course it comes down and lifted the back end of her car only. So she's driving along on the front two wheels for a few hundred yards. They sometimes will lift up one end of the car, so you're driving on two wheels, sort of like those stunt drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Or the front end, or or they'll lift you up and put you down. Yeah, hers was in downtown Union.
Wow.
Fairly large city, but often, yeah, it is rural areas.
Hmm. Yeah, I have to admit, for whatever reason, I had not realized I think I'd heard about a car lifting, but not that it was really actually pretty prevalent. And I was thinking like, maybe I won't drive to Bakersfield at night by myself. I said, just my luck. It will happen to me.
There's a lot of counters up in that area, just saying.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things I think I could be okay with, but that I'm not sure I could.
Well, most of the witnesses, I will say, were pretty freaked out.
Yeah.
having researched this, I'd be like, yay, wow, higher, faster. But that's just me.
Now, do you have any stories from witnesses that are just humorous in nature and they knew it, or they afterwards felt it was just a humorous thing?
It's funny you ask that, because I've been looking into that. I don't have a whole lot, but yeah. Dolly Safran, the lady I talked about, she talks about one time where they put her back and they had dressed her in someone else's nightie. Which she, you know, she's not that kind of a person who wears a little frilly nightie. And that was funny.
That is funny.
I just recently interviewed a guy who had a very humorous incident. He lives up in Canada and saw a gray down, you know, he's on a bridge and it was down in the parking lot there. And he's looking at it. And as soon as he saw it, he went, you know, he jerked and stared. And the little gray mimicked him and jerked and stared back. And he leaned back and like, and the gray did the same thing in sort of a friendly mocking way.
Right.
But he said it made him seem so playful and really human.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny as heck. It really was. So yeah, there are little incidents like that. I've just started looking into that because people have asked me, you know, do they have a sense of humor? Mm-hmm. Yes. There was another case investigated by Dr. Jacobs, I think, where the ETs, which are often described as being bald, you know, having large bald heads, had taken the lady on board and lifted up a lock of her hair and held it up against hers and went like that. Yeah, there's some indication they do have humor. Actually, Dolly did go into that in the book. Mm. They find us humans very sort of morbidly funny in our behavior.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is true. I could see that. Now, are there any stories connected to animals that are not like, you know, the cattle mutilation thing, but something more just different? A pet, or I don't know, abduction of an animal that comes back and they notice it?
Oh, yeah. Geez, you must be psychic. That's coming out in volume 5 of Not From Here, where people's pets are taken on board. So you're getting a little bit of a scoop here.
Ah.
Yeah, that does happen. Hmm. I'm doing research on people who've had their dogs taken on board. And yeah, Dolly told me about this. She saw the ETs do keep pets, and there's a well-known animal here, capybara.
Oh, yeah.
Largest rodent.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that they like those. And it's funny because her ex came over. I met him. Because he was able to verify her experiences. I was really interested to, you know, I always like to vet a witness as much as possible. And he confirmed that because he himself had experiences. So, yeah, people are taken on board with their pets sometimes, and they do have pets. And in my book on healing cases, The Healing Power of UFOs, I found about a dozen cases where they have healed animals.
Aww.
It's really cool. There was one case in, gosh, Texas, where there was an audience doing an illegal, you know, rooster fight, and UFOs showed up. And these two roosters had basically mauled themselves to near death and were lying there, still kind of. And this UFO shows up and shines down beams of light on them and healed them.
Aww.
I know how skeptics can be like, yeah, right. But this is what the main witness says. Susan Navarez Morton was her name. I remember it vividly. And I believe it because I've got a bunch of cases. A guy whose horse was healed of a hoof disease.
Oh.
A lady whose dog was healed of valley fever. Ray Hernandez, who's very well known in this field, got involved because ET showed up in his living room and healed his dog of, well, arthritis mostly, but other conditions. It was quite an elderly dog. And the dog came up and was jumping around like a little puppy. Yes, they are definitely studying all aspects of Earth. I did an article in one of the, or a chapter in one of the Not From Here books about that. Alien zoos, I call it. People are taken on board and they'll see Earth animals, but ET animals as well.
Ooh, ET animals. Love that. Now that might not, well, actually seeing that one, now that I saw whatever that was, I don't think I'd be as afraid. I think sometimes the first time you see anything paranormal is always at least startling, even if you're not really, maybe the word startling is better, because you're just not prepared no matter what people say. And I think you can sort of prepare yourself now, like ahead of time, so you're not quite as startled. But I love that idea. It shows to me the benevolent side, because people that care about animals tend to be more compassionate people. And the fact that the ETs care about the animals enough, that's very touching.
Yeah. And as a little side note there, is in terms of contactees, I started to realize this because people kept saying, oh, you know, I'm really closely connected to animals. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, the contactees. And now that's a question I ask.
Oh, more, are they connected?
Almost every time. Yeah, they have an amazing list of animal stories. And it's really cool. I have some myself. I remember a deer came up, walked right up to me once and wanted the cookie I was eating. Everyone's like, look, like this deer just came right up to you. And had a hawk land right next to me. It's really amazing. Dolly Saffron, I'm like, have you had any? Well, she was a zookeeper and had so many stories. Yeah, contactees will have pets come right up to them. One guy, he says, you know, I don't even like dogs and cats, but after my experience, they followed me around everywhere. It's really funny.
Well, it is interesting that I know from my experience, I've had animals that can see things you can see. They see things that aren't there. And we had a little black cat we adopted with green eyes. And one night in the middle of the night, she didn't meow very often. I got up and right before the altar we have, she was talking to something. And she sounded like she was going, meow, 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 meow. And it was like this long conversation. I remember thinking like, what the heck? You know, and then whatever it was stopped. And that was that.
I just saw a cartoon on Facebook. We're like, look, I've got a brand new ghost detector. It works really well. It was a cat, and we're holding the cat up to the ghost. Go run.
That's so true. It is really true. I love that. So awesome. We have about 3 minutes left, and I wanted to let people know the best place to reach you. Is it your website?
Yeah. Thanks, Krista. My website, you can definitely reach me if you have a story or a comment or a question. If you just type my name in, it should take you there.
Yeah.
Dennett.weebly.com.
And we will add it to our website too. We always put our guest website up there. And then of course you're on YouTube.
Yeah. I'm all over social media.
Yeah.
And my books are available on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and a bookstore if you can find it. They're disappearing. I'm so mad.
Oh, it's heartbreaking. I am a huge bookstore lover. I've worked in bookstores. I love books. And I mean, I love the fact that you can do things online, but the physical bookstores are very necessary too. They're just, we need both.
I totally agree. Yeah.
So there's something, when one closes in LA, I'm always really sad. And I always try to like support the ones by buying something there, you know, so that I can at least try and help in my small way. I can't help in a large way, unfortunately. But well, any last sort of words you'd like to share with us before we close out?
Yeah, I would say don't trust the government on this subject of UFOs. Move past the fear and the disinformation that's surrounding the subject. Look to yourself for answers and live your life in joy. Leave fear behind. Live with light, with love and truth and compassion. I think that alone would make huge changes in the world and how we treat each other.
So I love that.
Those would be my last words.
Those are wonderful. And we certainly will hope to have you back on, since I know you have all kinds of like things you've studied and explored that really suit our show. And we've totally enjoyed having you. And thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, it's been a pleasure and an honor. Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for listening in. Join us next time as we continue to explore the esoteric and the obscure together. Have a magical week.